This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Karen Lieberman was once so ill with clinical depression that she would sometimes spend 24 hours at a time crying. Though she now says she was barely surviving at the time, she nonetheless continued to go to work through 10 years of illness. She told the magazine Benefits Canada, while suffering, "I was ashamed and I kept my illness a secret as much as possible. I did not ask for support. I learned that not acknowledging my illness left me isolated. It also meant my coworkers could not address the issue, which created resentment." Karen Lieberman was eventually hospitalized, and after a lengthy period of recovery, she joined the work of the Mood Disorders Association of Ontario. Her work included raising awareness about mental illness and reducing the stigma associated with it. Karen believes there are thousands of workers affected by mental illness who are trying to hide it. She says that people are afraid to talk about their illness because they don't have the skills or the language. We're joined on the phone by Karen Lieberman.
Welcome to People First Radio, Karen.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure.
You were working as a social policy analyst when you began to experience symptoms of depression. How did depression enter your life?
Well, Kevin, I have to say it entered my life very slowly and insidiously. I had, quote-unquote, nothing to be depressed about in that there was no cataclysmic event or huge trauma. But ever so slowly in the mid-80s, I started to feel just not right, tired all the time, losing energy, feeling, frankly, this physical pressure behind my eyes that was kind of making me want to cry, more irritable, more agitated, difficulty sleeping. But everything happened so slowly and so insidiously at the beginning that it was easy to explain it away. And it was only after, to be quite honest, weeks and months and even years, when all of those rather benign symptoms started to deepen, affect the way I was interacting with other people, affect every aspect of my quality of life, and then began overlays of feeling hopeless and useless and worthless and a terrible mother and a terrible wife and, you know, terrible fill in any blank you want, that I really began to realize that I was in trouble.
You told the Toronto Star in an interview they did with you that you were an accident waiting to happen and that that's very common among women. Tell us more about the specific challenges faced by women when it comes to depression.
Well, you know, a couple of things strike me. First of all, in my specific case, I was also the child of a mother who had been seriously ill with what was ultimately called manic depression, bipolar disorder. So in some ways, you know, I was in a kind of a genetic cesspool, as well as family members that I found out much later were also ill. But for women in general, there is no question that in spite of the nudge-nudge, wink-wink nature of some things that are said, you know, over the water cooler, that women are more vulnerable, particularly to depression, because of various hormonal changes throughout their reproductive lifespan. So things like menstrual periods. We've heard more in the media about postpartum depression. Women who are in the period of time before menopause, these are times of great fluctuation in our hormonal structure, and all hormones can make the vulnerable brain triggered. So I think, and then of course, there's the pressures of not only in today's society, you know, being an active member of the workforce, but also being a good wife and mother, and I think there's a kind of overlay of superwoman, do it all, be able to do it all, and under no circumstances crumble. And that includes at home and in the workplace.
Tell us a little bit about your recovery, the period of recovery that followed.
Well, my recovery was long and slow, very difficult, because, frankly, I'd left my illness too long without seeking help, and so the illness had pathologized in my brain chemistry, making it more complex to deal with. I was hospitalized many, many times, 17 times. I had 6 psychiatrists. I was tried on 27 different kinds of medications. I had electroshock therapy treatments, all kinds of talk therapy. And after many, many years, close to 12 years of what was, I think, very educated, but nonetheless trial and error, a medication was found that worked for me, brought me back to some kind of cognitive stability, and then all the years of psychotherapy began to take hold. I began to make some significant life changes, left a very difficult marriage, changed jobs, began to work for the Mood Disorders Association, surround myself with positive people who add energy and enthusiasm to my life. And so the recovery was a very difficult one. I still consider myself, even though I've been relapse-free now for over 12 years, I still consider myself in recovery.
People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and the issues related to health and wellness. Coming to you on CHOY 101.7 FM and streaming at CHOY.ca.
According to the World Health Organization, mental illness is often underdiagnosed by doctors, while patients appear reluctant to seek professional help. Only 2 in every 5 people experiencing a mood, anxiety, or substance use disorder seek assistance in the year of the onset of the disorder. Overall rates of psychiatric disorder are almost identical for men and women, but striking gender differences are found in the patterns of mental illness. Karen Lieberman spent 10 years struggling with severe depression while still going to work in her role as a social policy analyst. She then spent 12 years experiencing various treatments before recovering, being in recovery. Karen Lieberman joins us on the phone from her home in Toronto.
Karen, tell us a little more, you touched on this earlier too, about the ways in which women in our society experience and respond to symptoms of mental illness.
Well, I think for women, you know, as was said, the incidence of depression, in fact, are higher with women, not with other illnesses, and in fact, there are other mental illnesses where it's an even split. But in terms of depression, women experience it more often than men by a rate of 2 to 1. What happens with women is that we have so many roles to play in our society. When we experience these symptoms, it's very easy to explain them away, and women do a lot of attribution. They say, well, you know, it's just the fact that I'm tired because I'm working so hard, or it's the fact that I've put on weight and I need to lose weight, or it's the fact that, you know, my kids are going through rough stages. And so for women, even though research has shown we are more into help-seeking than men around other medical issues, around mental health issues, we're equally as disinclined to seek help. What happens, of course, with so many of us, is that these illnesses then become just like any other untreated condition that needs treatment. These illnesses can go on for a very long time and become more intractable and more difficult to treat.
What about the workplace situation? How do workplaces and mental illness interact?
Well, it's a funny thing about the workplace. The workplace can be, for many of us with mental health issues, actually wonderful. I mean, in many ways, workplaces are wonderful because, number one, they provide a distraction for some of us who are struggling. They can be places where, you know, at least in the workplace, I'm productive, or I'm focused, or I'm contributing, when the rest of my life feels so out of control and so hopeless. But quite frankly, for most of us, workplaces, because of the stress that's involved in many, many workplaces, and the hormone overload related to the stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, that kind of stress, again, for the genetically vulnerable brain, can in fact trigger these illnesses, can be the tipping point for these illnesses. So workplaces where people are in fact not happy with their work or stressed with their work, those are the very places that we can become very, very ill. We also live in a society where I dare say employers are beginning to understand the economic burden of these illnesses and how much it costs companies in the economy in terms of lost productivity and so on. But there's still a very real reluctance and or ignorance about what to do about it. We don't seem to have the language to be able to approach people in non-threatening ways to help them to get help early. And so what happens is people, managers, supervisors, coworkers kind of tiptoe around, walking on eggshells, hoping that these changes in behavior and changes in productivity will somehow magically go away, because we don't know what to say to the person. We don't know how to get them the help they need. We think we're going to say the wrong thing. And so in many cases, as in mine, people don't say anything. And what can happen is that as productivity slips and as people become less functional in the workplace, we then get into discipline and performance appraisals and ways of getting people out of the workplace, when if we'd spent time helping them to get help, they could get well sooner and we wouldn't lose some of our very best and our very brightest.
Karen, we just have a moment left in our conversation today. Have things improved over the years up until this point in time? Have things improved in responding to mental illness in the workplace?
There is no question. You know, we don't have to convince employers that this is a very serious issue. I think the stigma still exists, obviously. There's still bias and prejudice. But honestly, I do believe companies are beginning to see that it's in their own best economic interest to get people help. I think we're just at the cusp of trying to figure out exactly how to do that. And I think that's going to be a very exciting time over the next decade.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
It was my pleasure, Karen.
Karen Lieberman is a mental health advisor and former executive director of the Mood Disorders Association of Ontario.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.